Welcome to Geek Nerd Tech on Black Hollywood Live. Today, Obama's tweet breaks records. People distance themselves from Trump, and Netflix fights to keep Star Wars. Let's go.
You are tuned in to Black Hollywood Live's Geek Nerd Tech.
Didn't I tell you we was gonna make it to the top, nigga?
Welcome to Geek Nerd Tech, the show we break down tech news, nerd culture from a black and brown geek perspective. My name is Joe Braswell. I'm joined, as always, by the brother on my left, Akili Shine.
Akili Shine, man. Yes, sir.
In the building. How you doing?
I'm doing great, man. Living life. Good. Loving life. Living it. Doing good. The whole thing, man.
Good, good. I'm doing okay. I still, as everyone else in the country, I'm trying to just really temper my rage. I go back and forth from rage to anger to disgust on over just the whole, you know, but not surprise over the whole, you know, South Virginia Trump situation. It is Charlottesville. It is killing me. But you know, I digress. I was talking to someone about this earlier today. Like, you know, it's a level of watching stuff live in real time, and then you go to the second layer of like reading stories because you read like what in depth people, you know, people say in depth analysis, and then it's just, and then by the time you get through that and then get to podcasts and like more television analysis, it's just like that's too much. I need to censor myself. I don't know how you doing. What do you think?
I mean, I definitely think it's unsettling. Like you said, it's not surprising. I mean, I think for a lot of people, the imagining of a newer America because of Obama, and you know, I mean, I think that argument is clearly out the window. A post-racial society,
post-racial.
Yeah, no post-racial society. However, I mean, I think it's reflective of kind of where we've been, and when you look at the BLM and you look at other activist groups that have been trying to be vocal about what's been happening, I mean. It's good to have some of this kind of dialogue, you know, be presented to the people. So I kind of appreciate it. I kind of appreciate that we have the new cycle covering this and the analysis and the conversation, because it offers people that are sleeping under a rock, hey, like, this is what's really going on.
That's a great point, because I really feel like there's a lot of people in this country who still have a conversation like, oh, that's still a thing?
Exactly.
Oh, they still mad? Or, oh, KKK is still around? Or black folks are still getting, you know, shot?
Yep.
Like, it shocks me how many people are still living in that world. So yep. It's to that degree. I mean, this does make sense.
Yeah.
You know. But there's a lot of things, a lot of intersections of what we talk about here with the events in Charlottesville. Well, the first thing I like to talk about is President Obama, who's been, you know, very uncharacteristically low profile during the entire Trump, you know, first 200 days. I think obviously purposefully. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's laying low, his vacation, he's writing a book, and plus, like, I mean, frankly, the one thing that galvanizes the right more than anything is Barack Obama, you know, and so he says a word, a peep, and the right will be able to just, you know, all unite behind what, you know, getting behind whatever he said. So he's been very strategic. He did do a very limited and very strategic and very poignant tweet about, you know, clearly about the events in Charlottesville, is showing him with four young children of all races in a window. And he just simply said, no one is born hating another person because of the color of his skin, background, or religion. It is the most liked tweet in history with 3.5 million likes, and it's dope.
Yeah.
And over 55,000 comments and 1.3 million retweets. And yeah, that just shows you where he's at versus our president.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it speaks to the power of imagery, power of quoting. You know, Nelson Mandela is such a iconic figure in history, and dealing with, you know, race relations and human rights, like what he represented, to be able to quote him, I think it was appropriate and kind of was a great juxtaposition to what Trump's comment was as it related to what happened in Charlottesville. So the fact that it now is the number one tweet and in the top five for number one tweet that's been liked and in the top five for being retweeted, I think it just shows his power. It shows his influence. And I mean, it's like day and night comparison to, you know, Trump and Obama and what they stand for as men, and clearly where their values align, you know. But I love the fact that he was vocal. And to your point, I mean, I think he has to play the line a little bit not being too political now that he's out of the White House. But I think him doing this, very powerful statement.
Well, you know, he says he's gonna be back. I mean, one of his number one things once he gets back is to really help the Democratic Party, help with this gerrymandering situation, help with, you know, getting people registered, help with getting, like, you know, people voting in the right places, and like and the, you know, the voter fraud, the anti-voter fraud people. But like you said, him using Nelson Mandela's quote is brilliant, because it doesn't allow people to say Obama's weighing in and he thinks he's still the president, or he thinks he nope. Just a quote from Nelson Mandela on my Twitter feed, and it's very simple with a very simple image. So I dare you to say something about it. I know you want to, Trump. I know you want to, right wing, but what are you gonna say? Mm-hmm. You know, other than that's gonna make you look worse than you already do. So I'm very, very, very smart, and also it's what a leader does too. Exactly. You know, like he did with one tweet what Trump has not managed to do, even, you know, a little bit. So
yeah, I mean, his my last thought on that. That's a great point. His influence just with the tweet is way more powerful than what, you know, Trump is doing with all the cameras and the power media machine behind him. Like, he could have, you know, galvanized the nation. He could have brought together the nation by, and that's what typically presidents are supposed to do. They're supposed to be kind of have sort of like a minister element to their leadership, and he did not do that. He brought more spite and anger and bigotry to, you know, what happened in those events versus healing and warmth and love. So I think this also speaks to the power of social media. So
right. Yeah, I agree. So moving forward, so you know, the neo-Nazi site, the Daily Stormer, which is, I mean, I don't know, it's already has got a lot of flack from, well, GoDaddy's got a lot of flack for hosting the Daily Stormer. And so finally, you know, and first of all, I love that people are really coming out in all different ways to sort of combat, you know, these things and try to figure out, like, who these people are, sort of, you know, publicly shaming them, you're racist, finding out, you know, who's hosting these sites. It's not just, you know, that they exist. They have to exist in the infrastructure that we all live in, which means people have to allow them to exist. So I like this approach. But GoDaddy hosted a site. And so people brought that to GoDaddy's attention. GoDaddy did the right thing and booted the Daily Stormer. And then Google, they promptly went to Google, and Google booted them. And I think it's great.
Yeah, I think it's great, too. And a lot of people, you know, we'll discuss the other side of it being, you know, a form of censorship and blocking someone's First Amendment rights to be able to be vocal and expressive or whatever they want. But I think that you have to take a stand. And when you sign up for a social media account, or you have a, you know, a domain account, like, there are terms and conditions. And so in those terms and conditions, there are things that you can't do. And so in breach of that, I think it gave them the right authority to be able to do that. However, I think that, you know, I already know that they're on the dark web now, and I think that gives them a little bit more power, because now no one can censor them, no one can take them off, because there's no regulatory forces on the dark web like there are, you know,
sure,
in the web that we all are accustomed to. So I think that, you know, the alt-right and this blog will be able to, you know, probably raise more attention now and be able to do it even more disrespectfully and hatefully than they were before. So
yeah, it's true. And I want to make one thing clear too. I mean, people who think this is sort of like unconstitutional, whatever, saying this is take away their free speech, this isn't, they weren't booted just for being white supremacist website. They're booted for the specific things that they said. Mm-hmm. They're very, you know, they said the young woman who was murdered, she died in a road rage incident, mm-hmm. and she's a drain on society, and that most people are glad she's dead. That'll get you booted. That's not, mm-hmm. you know, from everywhere. It should get you booted from everywhere. So I just want to make that point clear. Anyway, I agree with everything you said, of course. Separately, this is, you know, Trump administration is a story about them demanding data of over a million visitors to the anti-Trump website, like, under the guise of, I mean, look, There's a lot of things. This is a part of this continuing effort. It's just like the thing that happened with Trump's his voter fraud commission. He appointed that guy to get to the bottom of the 3 million illegal voters. So to do that, he's going to go and find, he needs the governors to give me all the information and social security numbers of everyone, so I can make sure that everyone is voting legally. And now an anti-Trump site. Because it may or may not be a dangerous spread. They want all the information. Like, this is on some totalitarian, like, you know, bullshit right here. I don't know.
Absolutely. Not only just the fact that he wants information of who's been on the site, but he wants their name, he wants their whatever other metadata was involved in signing up for the site, their photo, what pages they clicked on in the site. He wants specifics of what traffic, you know, each person, you know, contributed to on the site, like, and how that could be further used in the future. Like, that's a terrible thing that he's using his presidential power to be able to do that. And I think it's only going to open up another firestorm for him. So,
yeah, he's something else. And also, like, you know, he has his, you know, Trump has many advisory councils. He has his manufacturing advisory council, his tech advisory council,
economic council.
And thankfully, people are leaving mm-hmm. as they should. I mean, frankly, and I'll say this again, this was said before, if you're a CEO today and you are sitting on one of Trump's advisory committees and you're CEO, like, you need to, I mean, I don't know what to say about it. You need to be gone. I don't care if it's Pepsi. I don't care who you are, what you're doing, Walmart. We know about my man from Merkel, who left, and he immediately said, like, you know, mm-hmm. trashed him immediately. Well, you know, Walmart, Merrick, I'm sorry, Merkel, Merrick, Merkel's the Merrick Pharma, he immediately criticized a bunch of other people, but now people are leaving. The CEO of Intel's out.
Mm-hmm. 3M.
3M, others, and so, yeah, I don't know. Only Michael Dell and Dell is left as the only tech company left. What's Michael Dell doing?
Well, yeah, I mean, you have two committees. You have the economic committee, and which Elon Musk was a part of, which he dipped out a few months ago. And then you have the manufacturing committee. And I read that even the committee has never met one time.
Sure.
So there's never been a meeting of the minds. There's never been any type of conversation about how, you know, American companies could create more jobs and be more innovative. It's just all for show. And it's all created to figure out a way to deregulate stuff. So
yeah.
I feel like you're right. For the CEO, for the company that stays on the committee, their argument is, well, I'd rather be at the table to be able to vocalize, you know, the wishes and wants of my company and my employees so that, you know, our company can be successful. I'd rather be in a position to have the dialogue than not to be in a position and have any dialogue. So I don't know if I agree with that argument, because when you are aligned with someone that clearly is a racist,
right,
a bigot, and doesn't have the best interests of American people, it's like, what does that say about you as the head of the company? And what does that say about you? What does that say about your company? And so, should we as consumers participate in your products? I don't think so. So, yeah. Like, for instance, Walmart is still on there.
Yeah.
Like, what does that say about that guy?
And Walmart is actually being vocal about the situation. He's being vocal, but that's not enough. It's just like all these folks who are, like, you know, like all the Ted, you know, Marco Rubio, who was doing all that tough talk, and all these Republicans that were doing all this tough talk after the whole sexual assault thing, after the whole Access Hollywood tape. Like, I have daughters. This is ridiculous. Like, this guy's horrible. And then they all fell in line and voted for him to get their, you know, tax cuts and whatever else, repeal Obamacare. Now we will see. Everyone's talking to him. Rubio's back. Rubio had a whole blog screed. Even punk-ass Paul Ryan, who didn't go as far as mention a president by name, but he did say, oh, racism has no place in our society. Thanks, Paul Ryan.
That's right.
Really brave of you.
Exactly.
But, like, you know, so nothing from Mitch McConnell. Nothing. No tweets, no nothing. So, but there's a lot of people who are speaking out, but the question is, will they be able to do something? Well, the tweet or a statement is not brave. Like, they can all stand up, but then when it comes to voting, they all line up and vote right along with him, or still support him, or still get on board to get their tax cuts.
Yeah.
Like, that's and Walmart's the same. It's reprehensible.
So, out of the, you know, question for you, out of the Fortune 500, there's not too many black CEOs.
Yep.
And so, obviously, my man was one of the,
yep,
one of the first and only,
yeah,
black CEO on the council.
Yeah.
Like, being that he left because of this, what happened in Virginia, what does that statement make when Trump, like, he first he endorses him. And then once he leaves, he fires back. He tweets. You don't know about
he
this?
Claps back.
He claps back immediately. Oh, yeah. But immediately. He can't tweet about denouncing white nationalists and white supremacists, but he could tweet about this black CEO saying that I won't be a part of your council.
This is what Trump does. This is so funny. Like he is when you cross him, he gets back with like really accurate specificity. He like that green shirt you wore on Tuesday was terrible. Like he will get like specific as hell. But on this, he's vague. Oh, many sides. It's like I don't want to hear it. Like one person went as far as to say, I think it was it wasn't Sessions, but one of those guys went as far as to say that, like, oh, Trump didn't mention the white supremacists because he wanted to dignify them by mentioning them by name. Like, all this stuff. And then, of course, that was all race when he came back into the press conference yesterday, where he just went, like, unhinged on all stuff, talking about George Washington had slaves. What, you get rid of him, too? Like, as if George Washington and Robert Lee are even remotely the same, you know, like, in that way. I mean,
in what way?
Well,
I'm sorry, but you don't have to get into that. But
no, I'm not.
They are kind of.
No. What I'm saying is, look, we can make the argument versus Thomas Jefferson, you know, and George Washington. I'm not making the argument that those are the best guys in the world.
Right.
What I am saying is to make a comparison between George Washington and Robert E. Lee. Robert E. Lee was literally it was a traitor against the country who led a basically rebellion against the country to dismantle the Union as we know it.
Right.
In the name of all things that we say we hold dear, including like the enslavement of Africans and when they were now African Americans, you know, and so that's different. So it's a little different, you know. And again, I'm not making the argument that, hey, they're all great, but I'm just saying, like, historically, I'm making his argument that those are apples and oranges historically. And, you know, I don't know. To me, the reasons why you're taking down his statue are not the reason. If you want to make a separate case of why you should take down George Washington's statue, that's just we're going to make that case. But don't make the case of, like, George Washington and Robert E. Lee are the same.
I mean, and why are you up on the stage behind a mic justifying this?
Like false equivalency all the time.
Exactly. The bottom line is that you need to denounce what happened.
Yeah.
You need to be vocal about what happened and unify the country. And you clearly aren't denouncing it because you align with it.
Yeah.
So... I'm glad that he's clear with that. I'm glad that we see it. I'm glad that people are aware. Exactly.
Yeah. And the last thing I'll say is that I just the whole false. I made the mistake of turning on Fox News and Hannity. I saw Hannity and Newt Gingrich on last night, and they were like really going in. It was like another planet, frankly. But like all of this false equivalency of this new whatever the alt left. They think the alt left is that's a phrase that doesn't exist. It doesn't make any damn sense. But the whole false equating like BLM, Black Lives Matter with Nazis and KKK. Hey, we got the KKK. You guys got Black Lives Matter. All the same.
Both sides.
Like, that is ridiculous. Black Lives Matter is.
Have you ever seen any BLM member ram their car in front of a crowd? I don't believe you have.
It's a three-word mission statement. Black Lives Matter.
That's it.
Right. That's it. That's the whole rap. Black Lives Matter. Just want you to know we're here to say Black Lives Matter. That's it.
Right.
And that's a firestorm.
Right.
And that's a controversy. Like that to me is like, you know,
this is my last note. The fact that Trump could be vocal about Kaepernick, right?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Not exactly. Standing
yes.
for the national anthem, but he can't be vocal about the KKK or yeah. white nationalism. It's just the irony of it all, man. It's just crazy.
And moreover, just like because we're into this, but like just moreover, like for him to go in and go as far as to say, hey, man, look, the other day, there's some bad people out there, but the first day, they're just normal people out there. It's just they weren't all white supremacists. People were just peacefully protesting. You know, just it's a statue.
I like to know the facts first, bro. I like to know the facts first.
Yeah, the first time he's ever uttered that in my life. And like you don't. Unlike you, I like to know the facts. Yeah, you fake news. What do you got over there? Like he gets. I was having a conversation today about this. Like he gets really swaggy up in there in Trump Tower.
He does.
White House, he was kind of like I don't know, but in Trump Tower, he's like swaggy. Yeah. He was like pop collar, like hey fake news,
hey,
like
man.
Yeah, he's really I don't know feeling himself.
It all swings back, man. It always swings back. Anyway. It's gonna swing back for him.
Well,
in a major way.
In a major way. All right, let's move on from this topic entirely. Let's just get off of it entirely, because I want to talk a little bit about MoviePass, which is something that Netflix co-founder Mitch Lowe, who's been kind of like, you know, it's all talk about Reed Hastings, and Netflix is blowing up, and everybody forgot about my boy Mitch Lowe, who's just lying in the cut, but he came back. He has a new startup called MoviePass, and the idea is he wants you to pay $9.95 a month, and you can see any movie any day in the U.S. of A for $9.95
Yeah.
A month.
One movie a day. I think it's awesome.
I love it.
Great concept, but I think it's not as fluid as we think it is, and I think, you know, 90% of the movie theaters that distribute movies are on board, but I don't think they figured out a way to like really monetize it. There's only 20,000 subscribers, but I think in concept is dope. Like, I mean, you got to think that most people aren't going to go to the movies more than once a month. So, I mean, the upside could be great. And Marissa says she has it. So, what do you think? What do you think about it?
Marissa, do you like it?
I do have MoviePass. I like it, but there are some caveats to it. It's actually very affordable for, you know, the movie lovers, the people who are in the industry who have to see movies on a regular basis.
Yep.
But some of the caveats are that you have to actually physically be within
100 feet, right?
Yeah. Whatever movie theater you go to, you check in on your online app or whatever mobile app you're using for the movie pass. You have to physically be in the area before you can even buy your ticket.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah. And then there are some movie chains that carry it and some that don't.
Right.
AMC is pretty good at carrying it, some Cinemarks. But there are like Arclight, which is also big in LA, doesn't carry it. So it depends on what movie theater chains like actually allow are eligible for this pass. So some caveats there.
Huh.
But it is affordable in price range.
I mean, yeah, because if you see, look, you know, and I know I see at least a couple of movies, at least a minimum of two movies a month. So it already, it, in theory, pay for itself. But the fact that you can't do IMAX or 3D, cover a bus during the summer, but, you know.
Yeah, but you're talking about $10 a month. I mean, hey, if you want to go see that movie in 3D, cough up the money and go see it in 3D.
And also, but the fact that I gotta run, the timing, I gotta run like 100 feet to the theater, and I might the timing's off. Like, who knows? But we'll see.
Concept is dope, though. I think it just needs to be a little bit more fine tuned, and yep. I mean, more marketing behind it. But I love the fact that, you know, we talk about, you know, binge watching and Netflix, and you know, this subscription model that Netflix has really, you know, brought forth to the world. I think you've seen it in other arenas, and I think that's dope. Like, let's figure out a better way of managing how we interface with certain products and services. And going to the movies is cool. Like, because I don't go to the movies more than once a month. So, like, for me would be perfect.
Yeah.
$10.
I need that for my trips to a massage parlor.
Oh, wow.
I mean, actual massages.
Holy smokes. Holy smokes.
You know, a concept that does work well is DICE. DICE is a leading technology career hub center. What it is, it's a place where you as an individual can, it helps you be able to match your job skills with the job skills that are out there in the world right now. So what it does is, you know, it's a lot. Oftentimes you're looking for a job, you don't know if your skill sets that are in your resume match what's out there in the world. Well, DICE helps you look at those skills and tell you what's out there, helps you with your career paths, helps you find salaries, helps you determine what you're worth, if you're being paid enough, if you should be paid more. It's really great. And also, it's a good resource for jobs. They have over 70,000 tech jobs, all ranging from software development to user experience to project management, everywhere. And also, there's a great tool for you to be able to find out about the industry, what's happening, what's going on, see how you stack up. It's a wonderful resource and a great place. It's DICE. You should check it out over at dice.com/canyouhackit. Dice.com, can you hack it? As in hacking your career. You can hack your career with DICE. That's what it is. Netflix is actually still trying to hack this this Disney exit by trying to keep Star Wars and Marvel movies, like, which is really the bread and butter. I mean, it's one thing to be able to have all the Disney animation titles and all the old Disney Touchstone movies and the Disney movies, but really, you kind of just want to keep the Marvel and Star Wars joints on Netflix, and they're fighting to do that. I don't know if they're going to be successful, but I mean, what do you think of this?
I mean, I think a number of things about it. I mean, we kind of covered this last week.
Yep.
But obviously, you know, Iger and Disney, they're trying to, you know, create their own platform for, you know, obviously ESPN and their Disney, you know, children family movies. And so I think the fact that the Marvel equation with Netflix is more of like a edgier, darker situation, I think that kind of goes against the Disney brand. So I don't think that Disney would include that in their streaming service. So I think that there might be some type of renegotiation after 2019 or some way to figure out how to keep those properties on Netflix, especially with the Defenders about to drop.
Yeah.
And I mean, people already are fans of, you know, all the other ones that have come before that. And I think, man, like, there has to be some type of agreement made to continue that, you know, IP on the Netflix platform. So I think that I don't think that it's a final situation. I think that, you know, Disney doing that is great, and I think they're going to make a lot of money with that, but I still think they're going to have some type of outward distribution with some of their properties. And maybe it's a renegotiation, maybe it's a different way it's looked at, but I don't think that it's going to be gone from Netflix.
You know, and I wonder like how they're going to brand. Well, yeah, there's a lot of things unpacked there. I think you're absolutely right. Those Marvel properties on Netflix feel very much like Netflix properties. Even though they do exist in the same universe as the Avengers and other stuff like that, they feel very, you know, I mean, Daredevil and Luke Cage and Iron Fist and Jessica Jones feel mm-hmm. very much like they're of Netflix. And I'm really excited about the Defenders, and we'll see how that plays out. But like, yeah, these are shows that you know, that are grimy and yeah. violent,
yeah.
and so it makes you wonder about how Disney is going to brand this new streaming service. Yeah. Is it going to be brand like with the Disney script mm-hmm. with a little, you know, like the Walt Disney signature?
Yeah.
Because, you know, do you want to see, you know, Jessica Jones, you know, having sex with Luke Cage on the Disney
Cinderella?
Logo next to
no.
Cinderella? No. You know, so, and then Disney does have some titles that are, you know, under the Disney other properties in the Marvel and other things. So will it be called North Star or something like that, you know, by Disney? Will they separate out Marvel and separate out the cartoon stuff and the Freeform stuff and the ABC stuff? We already know they're going to separate out ESPN. Mm-hmm. So maybe they have a strategy to sort of separate some of these other brands out. But it's really interesting to see how far Disney will go in diluting some of this stuff when the power of it is having it all in one place.
And I think too with Netflix, I mean, their goal is to have, you know, already they have over 104 million subscribers. They're trying to have over 50% of the content that's on the platform original programming. Clearly they're not there, but the fact that they are $20 billion in debt, you know, they put up $7 billion this year alone to help produce more original programming. They just bought the comic book. I forgot the name.
Yeah,
but anyway, they're trying to create their own
IP
as it relates to like comic books and creating their own cinematic universe
yeah.
on Netflix. So I think they're well positioned to be able to say, okay, cool, Disney, take all the Marvel properties. We have our own. And so I think out of all the things that Netflix is doing in the space of comedy and anime, I mean, and the list goes on. I think to have, you know, comic books as a flagship thing that people go to Netflix for that they actually own 100% flat out, I think is the move, and I think that's what they're angling to do.
Yeah, man, it's really interesting. It's really, really it's something interesting to watch and see how this plays out. Let's see how other companies like Amazon react. And speaking of Amazon, you know, the solar eclipse is coming up. I think it's Friday, right?
Yeah.
Are you gonna check it out?
We're not in the zone.
No, we can go up to Griffith Park and check it out, right?
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I thought we weren't in the zone. I thought it was like we're not going to be able to see it as dynamically as people that are in the path of how the sun is setting or how the sun is moving.
That probably is correct. But I think if you go up to Griffith Park, you can see something. They got the telescope set up. They got the glasses ready to go. But so it might be worth a hike up there because you can't drive up there. But anyway, Amazon has got... Don't look at the screen.
Right.
Now, Amazon has got a... problems. They're selling some glasses that aren't manufactured by Amazon. Nothing is, but some glasses that are potentially dangerous. So they're recalling them. And there's a lot of these stories out there. People are really just capitalizing, selling some like, let me get some of these
7-Eleven glasses.
Yeah,
solar
yeah,
protected.
And they will actually really, really blind some people. So you watch out for those.
Man, that's crazy. I mean, hey, but I love the fact that, you know, even though it makes them look a little. It makes them look bad a little bit. I still appreciate them. I mean, they kind of have to, but, you know, being vocal about it and telling people like, hey, like, don't mess with these glasses. Like, we have a different pair for you or whatever. But
yeah.
I haven't really seen Amazon slip like this before, so it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, their vetting process.
Exactly.
But it's quick. So this is my favorite story of the week because this is something that, you know, you want to get into. But let me tell you something, brother. The next Apple Watch could be the first must-have Apple Watch.
Good luck with that.
It's coming out. The Nashables on record by saying this is the one to have.
No, thank you.
It's got connectivity everywhere. It's got the LTE situation in it.
Awesome.
It's got a fresh new look. It's got the new micro LED screen technology. It's brighter. It's a cool new setup. It's got a new fresh band. Like, you ready? Let's go.
Man,
have a watch.
I do not share your excitement. I'm sorry.
Okay, will you concede that it could be the new iOS 4, Apple Watch, all that stuff? Will you concede that it's dope and it could be something that's great? Just something you're not interested in, or you think it's just whack?
I mean, I wouldn't say it's whack. I would say it's whack if the price point was way too high.
Right.
So, I mean, the fact that you can use the watch without your phone, that's the selling thing that you're giving me. That's the selling point.
Well,
you can use it without your phone. You don't have to have an iPhone now. You could just have the watch by itself.
It took four generations. But yeah.
In fact, we're gonna not just release the one that has LTE, but we're gonna release another, Apple Watch that doesn't.
Woo, that's all right.
So hey, you can still use it with your phone.
You got a choice.
Come on, man. I'm sorry. That's not a big enough thing for me personally. I mean, if the price point is affordable, then I could see it being, a great thing. But if it's like $500, no, thank you.
Yeah,
get out of here.
And I don't. None of us in the whole planet know a scenario where we're gonna like walk around without our phone.
Exactly.
But I mean, maybe we don't carry a big phone around.
I don't
around.
Need a phone. That's what the sell is. I don't even need a phone now. I just have my iWatch.
Yeah.
Okay. My Apple Watch. Okay. Yeah. Good luck with that.
It's the future. If you want to stay in the past, bro, that's cool with me.
Hey, man.
I'll be up in the future.
I will say, though, I mean, and a lot of people have argued this. Some people will say that are in the sports industry or in the fitness industry that it's a great product. Others will say it sucks. It doesn't really track right.
Yeah.
So like beyond that, those capabilities, like what is it really offering? That I could read my text message, I could answer the phone on my wrist, I could see a photo on my wrist. Like
if you're mountain climbing, if you're active, if you're doing stuff, you're out in the world, if you're on the side of a mountain, you want to fumble and find your phone and drop your phone down the mountain. Come on, Akili.
Man. That's really inventive.
I'm just saying. What if you're mountain climbing?
It's really inventive.
What are you going to do? You have a phone and a watch?
Exactly.
Anyway.
All right. Teach his own, man. Teach his own.
Facebook, Apple, and other companies are asking the Supreme Court to block warrantless cell phone tracking. This is a story that seems like a no-brainer. In the age of Trump and the Trump administration, like the need to know who's what, where at all times.
Yeah.
But also that, Apple and Facebook, Facebook has a lot of metadata, and if the government can use that to track you, I don't know. That's bad news.
Yeah, you gotta have a warrant for that. Like, you can't just have that just off GP.
Yep.
Like, no. Like, if you think someone is doing some criminal activity, get a warrant for it just like you would for anything else. Like, don't think you could pull me over and take my phone and be like, oh, you were at these spots.
Right.
Oh, someone, we found a gun at one of these spots. It must have been you. Yeah. No, yeah. Nobody.
Yeah. I want to, I agree with all that. I want to transition into talking about my man Stan Lee, because I like the story a lot, because Stan Lee did his own little tweet. He just retweeted and posted an op-ed, if you will, that he wrote in one of his comic books in 1968. He used to have a little thing called Stan's Soapbox. It was like a little editorial. And he wrote the thing in 1968. I'll just read the first sentence. It's a whole thing. It's really great. But it just says, let's lay it right on the line. Bigotry and racism are among the deadliest social ills plaguing the world today. But unlike a team of costume supervillains, they can't be halted with a punch in the snoot or a zap from a ray gun. Get him, Stan.
I love it.
So, and he goes on to talk about racism. This is 1968. He just retweeted that. He just says, as true as it was in 1968. And, the real Stan Lee, emphasis on the real. I like this guy.
I like it too, man. I think we flash forward 50 years, almost 2018. I mean, his statement is kind of prophetic. His statement is like very insightful. I mean, but, and then we can also say what we faced in the 60s is kind of what we're facing now. So the times really haven't changed. But I love the fact that someone as high profile as him, and that means so much in popular culture, is vocal enough to be like, hey, we got to wake up. We got to be smarter. We got to be better. And I appreciate him for doing that. I think that's great.
Right. Good. I agree with all that. I love Stan. I love that people are finding different ways to suddenly, like Obama using Nelson Mandela's quote, Stan using his own words. I like people that are finding different ways to sort of comment on the situation today.
That's right.
I think it's really great. In other news, Daniel Craig said he's coming back for one more James Bond. Makes you wonder, was it all just a, was it all a negotiation? All of his like, I ain't coming back. I
add
ain't
another
doing
zero,
it.
Man. Add another zero.
I mean, I'm done with Bond. Go give it to someone else. Go find Idris. Whatever. All this. All this. All negotiations. As soon as last week they asked him about it, he was like, "It's not a. I don't know. It's not a done deal." You never know.
They added another zero, man. I'm trying to tell you.
Now he's like, James Bond. I love the guy.
Of course I was going to do it.
You know, so what do you think of that?
I mean, he says that when he was making those comments, it was 2 days after he had just finished, you know, the last movie.
Right.
And so, I mean, I feel it's still a slip up on his part. Either way, it's not being, you know, a good business person. And it's just kind of being, like, really emotional. You got to be more strategic in how you deal with the media and especially how you deal with a partnership that you have with someone.
Right.
So, I mean, I love him in the role, though. I love him in the movies. I'm excited that they're doing another one with him. I would have loved to see Idris. Obviously, we covered that story and what happened with that. But, hey, you know, Bond is a great franchise. And, yeah, I mean, I hope that this one is going to be, you know, explosive and like an enormous blockbuster. So,
I agree. Yeah. I agree wholeheartedly. I wonder if I was a producer of films, if I was a creative, which I am, but like, who's to say, why don't they just do what Seth MacFarlane did, and he liked Star Trek, he couldn't be Star Trek, he created the Orville.
Yeah.
Why don't they just figure out a way to make Idris some sort of like super spy? He's already Luther, but he should make some sort of like super spy situation and have his own franchise.
Would it be as potent though?
I don't know.
I mean, has James Bond ever has James Bond as a franchise ever been on TV though? Like, as a TV series?
That's a good question. I don't think so.
So maybe that's know. Why. Anyway, maybe it's just for the movies.
Yeah, we'll see. All right. This is a quick story. There's a bot that defeated one of the world's best video gamers. This is really no shock to me. I don't know why this is such a shock. AI.
Are you serious?
I don't know.
It's a huge shock.
I can never beat AI on Halo or some of these other games. But you put that joint all the way up to like deadly, whatever the highest setting is. I get served every time, so I don't know.
But you're not a professional gamer either.
Okay.
I mean, I'm just saying. Look out, like, no shade, no shade. But I think this is huge because you got to think the bot didn't get any special upgrade or any special knowledge of how to play the game. It like literally learned it from scratch.
Right.
And over time, it learned it by playing itself.
Yeah.
Over time, it got so good that it's beating out the best people in the world that play this game. I think that's huge.
That's
and exactly. And that's to like Elon Musk's point. Like, we have to be careful with the AI because once it learns all this stuff, outsmarts us, like, then what do we do? You know what I'm saying? Yeah, it's just a game. What happens if you apply that same technology to something else?
And how long did that take from, like, what is this thing?
Right.
Oh, it's a video game, to, like, oh, I'm serving the whole humanity.
Exactly.
Now what's next?
Exactly.
What you got next? Missiles?
Right.
You know, like, that's scary.
Exactly.
That is very scary. So, yeah, should regulate AI to keep the public safe. You absolutely should. I don't know. This is real. What he said about it is, you know, open AI... first ever defeat the world's best players in competitive esports. Vastly more complex than traditional board games like chess and Go. Like that's said before, it was like chess and Go. That's just one thing, but these are like super complex video games, and they just cracked it.
Right. I mean, it's not the first time we've seen this. Like we talked about Watson beating the top guys in Jeopardy.
Yeah.
Like so. I mean, we definitely have to be careful with this type of stuff because who knows if that could be hacked and reprogrammed for another purpose.
Yeah.
So.
Anyway. All right, last but not least, Affleck, you know, Justice League's coming very soon with Christmas, and Ben Affleck says he promises this Batman will be a more traditional Batman, more of the Batman you're used to seeing. It's, you know, more of the Caped Crusader that people, you know, kind of know. He said that the Batman versus Superman diverted a little bit from traditional Batman because he was, like, more rage-oriented. He was, like, more revenge-oriented, you know, and this is going to get back, you know, more along the lines of, like, the traditional detective, the thoughtful, like, dude. So, I don't know. I like it.
Yeah.
Fine.
I mean, great. I'm excited about, you know, the new movies. And, hey, man, I'm a fan of him as Batman. I think he did a great job in Batman versus Superman. So I like to see, like, how you know, how it manifests itself in these new movies. I think it'll be dope.
Yep, I agree. I mean, that's it. That's all I got. Anything else you want to add? Anything else?
Looking forward to seeing, man. Sure, man. What else is on the horizon?
A Kingsman. You care about that? You out on Kingsman?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not running to the theater for that one. I mean, but I wouldn't say, this is the second one, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I wouldn't say the first one was bad. It was dope. I think Samuel is just too much. So maybe that's what it is. I feel like he's the same guy in every movie.
Yeah, well, so. he's not in the second one, but he is in that one with the Ryan Reynolds one. The Hitman's Bodyguard.
Right.
You care about that one? That one's out.
Yeah, that one looks okay. It's like whatever, man.
Yeah, Sam has got to find another modulate. Another modulate. He's got to modulate a little bit. Actually, he really tries to modulate in Kingsman. He plays like a villain. He's doing a voice. He has a lisp. He's got like a hat to the side.
But it's the same guy.
Yeah.
It's the same guy, man. But I'm not mad at him. Hey, get your money, man. He holds the record for being in the most movies ever or something like that. He has the most appearances in movies.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's the top dog of that. Over like 500 films he's been in or something.
What? Wow. Yeah. Well, good for you, Samuel.
Exactly. I don't know, man. I don't know what else is coming.
All right. Well, I don't know. You have the Kingsman is what I'm looking forward to. That's what we have to see from there. That's all we got. Oh. Well, we'll talk about music next week. All right, the VMAs a little bit. Anything else? All right, well, that's it. Well, that's all we got. We will see you all next week. Where can the people find you?
Man, the folks can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Akili Shine, AKILISHINE. Where can they find you?
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Joe K. Braswell. And we will see you next week. Geek Nerd Tech. Bye.
From executives Kevin Undergaro, Dario Kristen, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us. info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio, Instagramming at KingXOBay. Thanks for tuning in. The views expressed here are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.